Warning, short-term exposure to Strixus has been shown to cause physical symptoms of anxiety, including confusion, sweating, shaking, upset stomach, a possible loss of motivation to succeed or accomplish goals, problems focusing or paying attention, difficulty processing information, confusion or fragmented thoughts, and a general feeling of depression or malaise. Long-term exposure to Strixus has been shown to cause episodes of emotional instability, eye irritation and rashes, unexplainable feelings of terror, extreme distress and problems with daily functioning, brief psychotic episodes, hallucinations, delusions, mood swings, and other mood symptoms such as depression or mania, eventual cardiopulmonary dysfunctions, asthma, and or panic attacks, catatonic states, coma, and eventual slow and painful death.
Howdy, folks, and welcome once again to the Ancient of Lore. I'm your host for tonight, Strixus. Kay will be joining me in just a few moments after I cover the first few bits. And let's see. Tonight's topic, Druidic lore. Why on earth am I doing Druidic lore today? Today of all days? Well, for those of you who don't know, and that would probably be the greatest majority of you, today is Beltane. Yes, indeed. Today is the last of the spring holidays. It is a cross-quarter holiday, halfway between the vernal equinox and summer solstice. Today is the day the cattle are driven out into the fields, the sheep are driven up to the pastures, and in general, well, it's a day for happy, happy things for those of us of pagan persuasions. La 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 da 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 da. But first, before I do any of those fun things, such as discuss druids, I've got my usual bits and pieces of news to cover, serving the lore, which I will not forget this week. And then I'll take a music break and start things up. So, first and foremost, let's do our news. And I'd like to try something out real... Nah, never mind. Anyway, the big news this week. C'Thun and Uru have both been downed. That's right, folks. You heard it here. Well, you probably heard it last Tuesday when it happened. At 22:30 CET, Tuesday night, world first by Nilum, a horde guild from Magtherian Europe, C'Thun was killed for the very first time. Millennium and Archimode France was the second guild to do this. First U.S. guild was Retribution. Congratulations to those guys. And the second U.S. guild was Impervious. Again, congratulations. You guys have done what many of us thought was impossible. For more information, please see the AQ40 progression thread, which hopefully Gabby, my dear and beloved monkey for tonight, will link in the channel. By the way, those of you in the IRC channel, please do not PM me at any point during the show tonight. PMs go to Gabby or Kay. And for those of you not in the IRC channel, why are you not in the IRC channel? You can join our conversations at irc.wowirc.com, pound, or number sign, depending on what side of the pond you're on. Wow Radio. Come join us. 24 hours a day. Whether the show's on or not, there's at least usually one person awake. So, next up. This week, in terms of news, I'm actually going to attempt to cover both the EU and the US forums, so here we go. On the EU forum, someone had posted a wonderful guide called Epics for Casuals. It lists world drop casuals that can be found by single players or small groups anywhere in the world. These are high-end epics and are quite nice, and I would like to point out that my shaman is currently wearing one of these, the Stonerender's Gauntlets, which are much nicer than my Tier 0 gauntlet. Next up in the news, there's an upcoming change to the number of items which... to some items, what number they stack in. Various leatherworking products and a few other items will be increased from stacks of 10 to stacks of 20. This is a really good thing for those of us who don't have nearly enough bank space. The CMs over at the EU Realms have posted a list of EU Realms that have the lowest populations and are therefore preferable for newest characters. If you are interested in finding out what these realms are, please go visit the thread on their forum. Excuse me, folks. There. Revisitation of the pizza from Doom. Next up, the newest PvP realms for the US have also been listed. For those of you who are looking for a new PvP realm to try out, you can see that thread. Upcoming authentication server improvements are in the works. We should expect to see them sometime in the next month or so. They have actually been working on several in the past month, but the newer ones coming out are even better. Yeah. I'll believe it when I see it, too. So, next up, Thunder Fury is undergoing several changes. For those of you that don't know what Thunder Fury is, don't worry about it. Over on the EU forums, there has been a thread detailing what players believe makes a guild one of the best guilds. It's actually a rather interesting thread in terms of discussion, and if you are in the EU and would like to chime in, or just want to go read it, go see the link. It's quite good. By the way, for those of you who are listening to the show on archive and are not getting these links, they will be posted in the show thread on our forums at wcradio.com/forums in the Ancient of Lore forum under today's show thread. That is the 060501. Yes, indeed, it's May 1st. Show topic, Druids. Next up, there's actually a nice lore post, novel, over on the US forums that deal with the Defias Brotherhood. Dealing with their motivations, what they're currently up to, and, well, that they were originally a fairly good bunch of guys who just kinda went wrong. Next up, discussion of the fact that paid character transfers, are still in the works. Expect them sometime in the future. Don't know when. There's also been a list of what the raid and dungeon team has been working on in the last few months. In particular, Noxramas, which we're all looking forward to seeing previews of at BlizzCon. Jeez. Boy, I'm ahead of the curve. At E3! And of course, springboarding off of this is The Road to Damnation, which was posted on the main WoW sites this week, which is the backstory of Kel'Thuzad. Quite nice read, they did a really good job with it, but the pictures are a little cheesy. I will let Kay discuss this a little later when I get him on the air. Okay. Let's go ahead and do Serving the Lore so I don't forget it this week. So, last week we left off with Ajal Narub. With the US and EU server, this is the name of the fallen empire of the Narubians. Empire once stood in Northrend, but when the Lich King found out that the Narubians were immune to the plague and his mind control, he invaded them and basically overran them. Now you will see many Narubians in service of the Lich King. Next server, Ajara. For those of you who have not listened to previous shows, do not know who Ajara is. Ajara was the original queen of the Night Elves. She was the most beautiful Night Elf of all. And was also directly responsible for inviting demons in. She started mucking about with the Well of Eternity, got Sargeras' attention, Burning Crusade, all of that, da-da-da-da-da. Our Burning Legion, all of that, yes. She is now currently Queen of the Naga. Expect to see more of her in the near future, folks. Balnazar. Yes, indeed, this is both EU and a US server name. One of the Dreadlords left behind in Lordaeron to oversee the demonic hold on the land. He's probably the one of the best of the surviving Dreadlords. He is currently in possession of the body of the paladin Saiden Drenathar, or Drenohan, excuse me, my pronunciations have gone to crud tonight, and was responsible for the creation of the Scarlet Crusade in said guise, basically as a tool to destroy the Lich King and his undead armies. Yeah, major spoiler, sorry folks. Black Dragon Flight. Black Dragons, also once known as the Earth Warders, were one of the primary dragon flights up until Deathwing sort of was corrupted by the old gods and went mad. The rest of the Black Dragons followed him into this madness, and as such, there are no more Guardians of the Earth. They are more drawn to fire now. Destruction is their art and death is their goal, to quote the RP books. Quite nice. Okay, Blackhand. Blackhand, this destroyer, also known as Warchief Blackhand, was Warchief of the Horde during the first invasion of Azeroth. He was the ruler of the Blackcrock clan, and with the backing of the Shadow Council, attained leadership of the Horde. He was killed by Orgrim Doomhammer, and is currently survived by his sons Rend and Maim. Great names. Real creative. Blackrock. Good follow-up to Blackhand. The Blackrock clan was first established by the warlock Gul'dan and ruled by Blackhand the Destroyer to serve as a figurehead for the Shadow Council. Yes. Gotta love the Shadow Council. Dunkor's up to his usual myth and madness. Blackrock clan was led the charge during the First and Second Wars, and those that now survive in Azeroth can be found around Blackrock Spire under the leadership of Rend Blackhand. Next up, Bladefist, an EU server. Korgoth Bladefist, leader of the brutal Shattered Hand Orc clan. He remained behind during the events of the First War, but later came to Azeroth during the events of the Second War, where the Warsong and Shattered Hand clans were later stranded. He is presumed, though not known, to have died between the Second and Third Wars. Bleeding Hollow. Such a great name. The Bleeding Hollow clan, one of the most legendary of the Orc clans during the Second War, was led by Kilrog Deadeye. They, in fact, take their name from Kilrog's missing eye and its bleeding socket. When Thrall liberated the orcs from the internment camps, a very small number of Bleeding Hollow members were recruited. What remains of the clan now flies the banner of the new Horde. So, that's your 8 servers for today. Next week, we'll continue on with serving the lore. I can't believe I've finally gotten to the bees. And by the way, for those of you keeping count, the last one was number 24. There's a lot more coming up. So, I'm going to take a brief music break. Attempt to get K-Duck on air. My dear and beloved K-Duck. He's going to hate me for that. And after that, we'll come back, talk a little bit about Kel'Thuzad, and then begin with our Druidic Lore section. And welcome back once again to the Ancient of Lore. This time, you will not be listening to the entirety of my voice for the whole show. Kay has joined me. Finally, I got it working, hopefully.
Hello, so, hello. Sorry for the late arrival.
Yes, indeed. So, yes, now that Kay is here with pizza, we shall
It's continue. Actually sitting on the counter upstairs because I have an internet show to do.
Oh.
I'm sad.
And actually, Kay, you're just a tad loud. Anyway, so, as I said it before, we're going to have Kay discuss a little bit of the Road to Damnation? Is that what they're calling it? Whatever it is, the prehistory of Nyxdramas. So?
It's not really the history of Noxramas, more so the history of how Kel'Thuzad became one of the Lich King's followers. But, yeah, I suppose I'll get into that now. Okay, it starts off with Kel'Thuzad being brought in front of a small council, including Antonidas, I can never say his name right, Pete's sake, including him, because he has been practicing arts of necromancy. It goes to show that Antonidas brings up a box that has the decaying remains of several rats. Two were still scrabbling clumsily at the sides of the chest in vain attempt to escape. Several magi bolted to their feet. There was a hubbub of dismay. Even the golden-haired high elf, who had been sitting in the back of the room, seemed startled. So this is pretty big, and he's practicing raising things from the dead. Obviously not very befitting of a mage of the Kirin Tor. Basically, what they do is they outcast him from Dalaran, I believe. Yes, you are out. You will be exiled from Dalaran, indeed from all Lordaeron. So, all through this, Kel'Thuzad has had the whisperings of the Lich King in his head saying, they don't understand you, if you follow what I say, you'll come to lots more power, yada yada yada. Make your way to the Ice Crown Glacier in Northrend. So, Kel'Thuzad does just that. He decides to go north, and he sails to Northrend, and he starts traveling up the glacier where he finds things like, the entryway was guarded by two grotesque creatures that resembled giant spiders from the waist down. Six narrow legs supported each creature's weight. The other two limbs were attached like arms to a vaguely humanoid torso. These are Nerubians. And he realizes that, holy crap, the Lich King can animate these, and I can barely do rats. I need to learn from him. So, he follows the, I believe it is Anubarak, yes. He follows Anubarak into what is currently underground at the point in time. He follows into this place where he takes a tour. And this is, of course, Noxramas, the necropolis. It is underground right now. He follows him through Noxramas. He goes through one of the wings, which is a magical laboratory, which has all that Kel'Thuzad could ever want to play with. And, what else? He follows him through the spider wing. He goes to the mushroom wing, where he notices that these mushrooms are growing on not normal land, but almost diseased land. And he can barely breathe when he goes in there. Finally, he goes into the last wing, and in here are two humans from presumably a Northrend encampment that have been captured, and they're crying, they want to be let out. I believe the wife is badly hurt, or the husband, one of them is badly hurt. Anyways, they're crying, they want to be let out, and Kel'Thuzad whispers to Anubarak, can't you do something to stop them? So what does he do? He quickly reaches in with his claw, spike, whatever, not even faster. He stabs the woman in the heart and kills her there. Except now she is risen as an undead, and she's slowly succumbing to the Lich King. And her husband tries to help her, and she pushes him away, tells him to back off, and she starts saying, hurt you, to herself. And she just lashes out at him, rips his eyes out, all these lovely, nice things. Woo-hoo. And so yes, that's one of the rooms of Noxramas. Kel'Thuzad, sickened by this, teleports away as soon as he can, where he proceeds to vomit and be completely disgusted when he's surrounded by three wraiths who remind him that he has no home to go to. He has come to the Northrend, and he's come to the Ice Crown Glacier. He's going to die if he doesn't do anything. And the Lich King could just easily summon him back anyway. So, yeah. The wraiths lead him up to the Frozen Throne, to which, as he keeps getting closer to it, either from fatigue or a combination of fatigue and the Lich King's sheer magnitude of power, he starts to fall to his knees, and he eventually crawls to the glacier, and he collapses at the feet of the frozen throne. And the Lich King says that I can bring you great power, and it will damn you for all eternity. Kel'Thuzad thinks this knowledge came far too late. Besides, damnation had little meaning without the prospect of true death. So, he accepts, and he swears loyalty to the Lich King, to which, in response, the Lich King sends him a vision of Nox Vahalis. A small black-robed figure stood in a broad circle outside on the glacier, their arms visibly wreathed in dark magic, rose and fell in the fire. Groaning chains removed Kel'Thuzad's understanding. Tremors shook the earth beneath their feet. To Kel'Thuzad's astonishment, the ice shifted and cracked at the top of the ziggurat, pierced the frozen ground. A building was being pulled up from the soil. While the rogue figures redoubled their efforts, a vast pyramid continued its impossible emergence. Chunks of dirt and ice flew outward with explosive force. Soon the entire structure had broken free of the Earth's embrace. Slowly but surely, Nox Vahalis rose into the air. And the Lich King says to Kel'Thuzad, "This will be your vessel, to be the ambassador to Azeroth and persuade people to join him in his plans." So yeah, that's the whole story behind it.
Ooh, okay. Interesting. Sorry,
copy. Very, very good to read on your own, because I don't do it justice. So.
Okay, mic down.
Music down.
I turned music down. Anyway, moving on. Okay, so yes, now that we've had Kay do his bit for the time being, let's move on before this show gets really long. I'm going to try to keep this brief. Let's do this pretty fast. So, what is a druid? Druids are technically, the keepers of the world, followers of Cenarius. Who the heck is that, you're asking? Blessed with powerful healing and shapeshifting abilities. Currently, Night Elves and Tauren both can be druids. We'll go into the history of that in just a little bit. And prior to the events of the most recent war, for a very, very long time, it was traditional for only Night Elf males to be druids. However, again, more detail on this in just a minute. So, who's Cenarius? Interestingly enough, this is one of the few cases where we have corresponding from two different races in the game. The Night Elf...
to butt in.
Oh, good.
Apparently your music is still...
Okay. Let's try that one. Is that any better? Indeed. I'm gonna turn myself up a little bit. Okay. So. Yeah, Kay, you need to come up just a bit. I apologize for these brief technical difficulties, folks. I'm still thrashing out the system that Leto had set up. So smooth and seamless. So, yeah. Anyway, lost my notes. There we are. Okay, so anyway. Both Tauren and Night Elf legend describe Cenarius as the son of a loon, or in the case of the Tauren, they call him. They call her Musha. God, I can't believe it. Anyway, complete and total. And the white stag Malorn, one of the ancients. He was primarily raised by Malorn and Ysera, the green dragon aspect, and is technically classified as a demigod. So, Cenarius brought to Azeroth the teaching of druidism, of the druidic magics. His first encounters with sentient beings, with the lesser races of Azeroth, was actually with the Tauren. And there's a nice little scroll up on Elder Bluff that tells the story of how Cenarius befriended the Tauren and taught them the basics of druidism. Unfortunately, after Tenarius left, the Tauren sort of forgot this. Whether from outside influences or our own inherent laziness. Eventually, Tenarius met up with the Night Elves. And at some point, shortly before the War of the Ancients, began teaching the brothers Malfurion and Illidan Stormrage. Correct me if I get any of this wrong, okay?
I will, but Leto says you should turn down the music even more, if you can. He says it should be 2, maybe 3 notches from the bottom of the volume scale.
Yeah, it was already there. Even lower now. Okay, moving on. Learn to turn your mic down.
I'm trying.
No, not you, Kay. I meant to say speakers. This has been real fun, guys.
It's worth noting that Illidan didn't practice the Druidic ways for very long. He didn't prefer how slow and sluggish it seemed to be compared to the sorcery.
Exactly. Okay, so let's discuss the events of the War of the Ancients. As much as I hate to admit it, we probably owe the Night Elf Druids the continued existence of, well, Azeroth as a whole. Because Vishara had had her way, well, it'd be demon fodder by now. I'm not going to rehash all of these events, but case in point, basically what happened was Azeroth invited the demons in. Malfurion said, hey, maybe that's not a good idea. And teamed up with Tenarius to drive back the demons, prevent Ashara from letting the demons in, and in the process blew up the Well of Eternity and half of Azeroth. So yeah, you win some, you lose some. Illidan, being the little troublemaker that he is, gathered up 7 vials of the water of the Well of Eternity before it went to Bluey, and used one of these to create a new well atop Mount Hajal, for which he was imprisoned deep beneath the mountain. Heck of a brother, eh? After the war, pretty much fell to Malfurion to help rebuild Night Elf civilization as a whole, to lead his people in the rebuilding. Under the guidance of Tenarius, he becomes the first Archdruid, which is the traditional role of one of the leaders of a druid, except pretty much means, hey, I'm the high muckety-muck here. In order to contain the magics of the new well, Ysera and the other dragon aspects help me out here, Kay.
They decided to sort of mask the Well of Eternity's energies by using it to grow the tree. And acknowledging the Night Elves and their sacrifice, even though it was their fault to begin with, they blessed it with immortality.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So, with said tree in place, the druids made an exchange with Ysera to basically go to sleep so that she could heal the world of the damage that had occurred during the War of the Ancients. And as such, druids as a whole were fairly much lost to Azeroth for a very long time until the events of the Third War. Now I'm going to take a quick music break, set things up, and I have a surprise for you guys after the break. Leto will be providing a pre-recorded segment. Yay! So, let's throw on some... I think I'll put on some Clandestine. Anyway, See you after the break, folks.
Greetings from beyond the life. Okay, not really, no. I'll make this short and sweet. Hi, kids. I've been asked to do a little bit of, lore, retainment lore, if you will, on how the druids were awakened. So, I shall. It all started... Actually, let's take a step back. This is from Warcraft 3, when Malfurion and the druids had to be awakened to help in fight against the Burning Legion. No. It doesn't start there. There has to be a reason why they're asleep.
Yeah.
There is. Back when the World Tree, Nordrassil, was grown, and it got the blessings of all the dragon aspects except for Deathwing... What happened was Ysera agreed to tie it into the Emerald Dream itself, which is like her realm of the perfect hippie world. Well, not hippie, but the idea of the perfect world if it was grown and if nature had been allowed to continue as it would like to, without any intervention of sentient life at all. Excuse me. I have a cold. What happened was, in this agreement, it would tie it into the Nuzdorm would be tied into the Emerald Dream, but in exchange, all the druids must be sent to slumber in Barrow Dens to walk the Emerald Dream, until called. So whenever they're not fighting or doing something important, the druids have to be asleep in the Barrow Dens, protected, so they could walk the Emerald Dream because of the agreement. You know, it kind of makes sense. You know, have to have this agreement, two sides, both get something out of it. Now, moving on, fast-forwarding quickly to the Third War against the Burning Legion itself. The druids are still asleep before the Night Elves knew what was happening. This, by the way, was just a Night Elf happening. But what had to happen was Tyrande had to get the word out to whomever had the ability to waken the druids, to wake them up. Or at least, that's what would make sense. Fortunately, there was no person to do that, so she had to do it herself. Now, the first step in this was to acquire a certain relic, the Horn of Cenarius. Because, originally, Cenarius was the one that could awaken the druids. But, unfortunately, Cenarius had been killed in the previous set of campaigns with the Orcish Horde. And so, he wasn't able to retrieve his horn to wake the druids. So, she, Tyrande, and her group of sentinels that were following her, helping her out, made it to where the horn was located. Unfortunately, during this battle, they had to get through not only an orcish encampment, but fight many trials of Cenarian spirits, I'm not sure how you described them, spirits of Keeper of the Grove, to get to the horn itself and be able to use it. Now, normally this wouldn't be a problem because, you know, you can take your time, you know, it's a hard fight, but you could win through attrition because, you know, they're just three spirits and a small orcish encampment. Unfortunately, another group had moved into the forest before this had, you know, started. The Undead Legions, the Scourge. And they were quickly encroaching on the Barrow Dens that Malfurion was residing in nearby. This put a very, very harsh time limit onto which Tyrande had to abide by. not fun stuff at all. So, she had to fight quickly through the Horkish Horde, through the Horde encampment, through the spirits, because the Cenarius was the only one that could really get past them without having to fight them. They guard the horn. And finally, they get to the horn and blow it just before time runs out for Malfurion. He awakens, discovers that this ancient evil has come back to the forest, as well as the Scourge, which is a new evil for him, and does all he can to repel them in the immediate area, which involves summoning up a lot of treants from the nearby forest and sending them against the small group of undead that had encroached on his lair. Moving on. Yet we have to find the Talon Dens. Oh, actually, no, I believe that happened with Malkyrin. I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly, but we had to get through to find the Talon Dens as well. I'm not sure where that was. But the big one I remember, well, the big one that was most important, was, in fact, the awakening of the Claw Druids, the bears. Now, the reason that it was so difficult was that the Druids of the Bear had already awakened, to a degree, some of them anyways, and had gone completely mad. And they were roving around in their bear forms. I think they were actually maddened by the fact that they had stayed in their bear forms too long and had developed a rage problem that some druids develop over time when they spend too much time in their other forms. I'm not sure, I don't remember exactly. This was a long time ago I played through these missions. But, moving on, they were able to, Tyrande and Malfurion, along with a small strike force, were able to fight through the Claw Dens, the Claw Druids, and eventually get to a place where they can blow the horn and wake up the slumbering and maddened druids of the Claw. During this fight, though, Tyrande and Malfurion get split up. And what ends up happening is Tyrande believes that they need to free Malfurion's brother, which turns out to be the night elf that was imprisoned deep below the earth, deep below the surface, because he had done so much evil. Evil is making a new Well of Eternity. This night elf was Illidan. Tyrande again believes that he should be freed because he can help out at this point. He understands the demonic legion. He knows how they work. And because of this, she believes that some good in him left. Malfurion disagrees, and that's why they split up at that point. Just for this mission, though. I'm trying to think, what else? This comes back later to when the warden, Maya of Shadow Song, is hunting down Illidan, and she feels that Tyrande needs to pay for her crimes by her crime being freeing Illidan. He has a great hatred for her. But anywho, that's what happens when the druids are being awakened. It was a very risky process because the strike force that was going into the Claw Dens was very much at risk of killing one of the druids of the Claw, and that was seen as a big no-no. It's a terrible crime, and they really couldn't do it. But anywho, that's what happened then. And they are able to wake them up, and they are able to use them in the fight against the Burning Legion. I'll probably be back next week for the show, like I normally was, before I took a break. But I'll see you then. And also, actually no, I'll let Strixus talk about this because I'd rather have her go over it. But just know that we have something special coming up for you. Kind of lore, role-playing mix show, if you will. A one-time thing, a special. I'll let Strixus talk about it more, hopefully later on, if she wants to. But other than that, good luck, Strixus. Godspeed. I know you do well tonight. Thank you for taking over from me. Good luck. Goodbye, folks. See you next time.
And welcome back once again. Yes, thank you, Leto, for doing part of my show for me. Saves me time and effort that I really didn't have today. So, what can we say about druids in modern Azeroth, now that we've discussed the past? Well, first off, let's discuss current druidic leadership. After the events of the Third War and the resurgence of Tauren Druidism, thanks to the encounter between Malfurion and Hamel Runetotem, who is now Archdruid of the Tauren, the Cenarion Circle welcomed in the new Tauren Druids, and for the first time ever, there is a cross-faction link between the two, in the form of the Cenarion Circle, who is currently the governing body for the majority of druids on Azeroth. It is a council of sorts. We know several of the members by name, in particular Hamel Runetotem, one of the sons of Cenarius, Remulus, and on the Night Elf side of things, Fandral Staghelm. Those of you who have been keeping pace with the Unkraj and Silithus events will know Staghelm from his role in the original War of the Shifting Sands, during which he lost his son, rather gruesomely. Staghelm in particular should catch our interest, as that he was leader of those who wished to plant the new world tree, which Malfurion actually opposed. And probably rightly so, as that the New World Tree doesn't seem to be growing particularly well. Keeper Remulus, as I mentioned before, is one of the sons of Cenarius. Yes, he was a deer, he got around, mated with just about anything, which you can probably expect from, you know, his paternal lineage, considering his great-grandfather did it with an eyeball. Come on, Kay, you have to have something to say about that.
No, I've typically, okay, that's gonna sound bad. I haven't touched that subject with a 10-foot pole.
Aww. Okay, anyway, we'll leave that for Slanik. So, there are numerous other members of this council, but that's pretty much the primary individuals. On the whole, Archdruid Staghelm is pretty much the head honcho at the moment, but a large number of the rest of the council currently oppose his actions, both in Silithus and otherwise. In particular, his amassment of Night Elf military forces, which he sees as key to the survival of the Night Elf people. Well, druids as a whole also exist in a number of sects. They're not really a cohesive group. Each subgroup worships a different deity in addition to Cenarius. All of them are worshippers of Cenarius and Alun, end of story. However, additional ones have taken up other deities in addition. And the Druids of the Wild, who are the followers of Ysera, and are pretty much in cahoots with her in keeping check of the Emerald Dream. The Druids of the Claw, as you may remember, the Bear Druids, basically those who worship the demi-beings known as the Bear Twins, Ursal and Ursoc, two of my favorite characters in the Night Elf pantheon. They were responsible for teaching the Night Elves and the Farbogs how to make totems and how to carve wood. The Druids of the Talon, also known as the Stormcrow Druids, are worshippers of the now-deceased demigod Avania, the Messenger of Alun. I covered her quite a bit in detail during our Religions of Azeroth show. It was quite good. those of you who aren't familiar with her, she's a very interesting character. Like their patron, they're typically gatherers of information. They have not been seen much of since the events of the Third War, which they actually played a very large part in. The Druids of the Antler are only really rumored to exist. They are worshippers of Malorn, the father of Cenarius, as I mentioned, and supposedly take the form of stags. I hope in the future we will see the sect prove to be more than a rumor, because it's a very good addition to the Druid lore. And for those of you who are familiar with the Wailing Caverns and its quest series, the Druids of the Fang, they are a splinter sect of druids whose chosen form is that of a snake or a hooded serpent. To quote Nara Wildmane, who's one of the primary quest givers, the druids in the Wailing Caverns, the druids of the Fang, are an aberration. They were part of an order of noble druids whose plan was to heal the barons, but now seek to remake the land to match their own twisted dreams. Indeed. So, as we reach the end of our discussion on druids, before we move on to our question and answer session, by the way, PMK with questions, or send them to thelorekeeper@gmail.com. It's probably a little late for that, but I will attempt to get to all the ones I have in there. I'll be answering questions on druid lore only. A few last-minute thoughts on my part. Just a reminder, folks, the Tauren were the first druids. Don't let the elves think that just because they managed to get a monopoly on it for several tens of thousands of years, that it's theirs alone. Okay, any comments?
Not really off the top of my head.
Yep, so I will apologize in advance for the for the disorganized nature of today's show, and move us on to a music break while Kay gathers up our questions, and then we will discuss them in detail. So here we go. Let's see. Kay, you got any requests?
Can't think of any. Sorry.
You're useless. You know that?
Thanks. Oh.
Love you too, Kay. Let's see, I think I'll play some... Yeah, that'll work. Once again, welcome back. Now it's time for question and answers, and then after that we will do Kay's Canadian Corner. And possibly after that a surprise. It's okay. Start throwing them at me.
Okay, you answered that question during the general talking. Sky Chaser asks, are the sources from which druids and shamans draw their magic separate? If not, why are the results so different?
They are extremely separate. The druids as a whole draw their power from living things. Yes. That's the stress here. Living things. The energies and magics associated with life. Whereas shamans draw their energies from elemental powers and from the spirits of the dead. The peaceful spirits of the dead. Anyway, okay, that was that one.
Prince of Magic asks, why can druids turn into moonkins?
Because they can.
We needed a generic form to laugh and gawk at.
Exactly. Oh, really?
But, in all seriousness, weren't moonkin supposedly, beings of Ilune?
Yes, they are servants of... They were originally servants of Ilune. And as such, it makes perfect sense for a druid of extreme power to be able to turn into one as an animal form.
Okay, Rumda asks, why did Cenarius leave the Tauren?
We don't know. For some reason, he left. Imagine how different history would be if he hadn't.
Juggling through PMs I have open. Catman, tuned in slightly late, and he wants to a recap on where druids came from, if we could. Just a brief recap.
Okay, Cenarius, son of Malorn and Delune, came to Azeroth, taught various beings and races how to be druids. That's where they came from.
Okay, I should stop rocking in my chair because I can hear it over Skype. Ha ha. Squeaky chair.
I repeat again, what is it with staff members and squeaky chairs? Am I the only person on staff that doesn't have a squeaky chair?
Perhaps. I'm going to probably butcher this name, I'm sorry. Either Keenutty or Kenutty asks, do you have any idea what creatures that is that druids turn into when they go into the water?
Yeah, it's sort of a seal. Sort of.
It's a saber-toothed walrus.
Indeed.
Besk asks, what are the main forms of the druids and what other forms that druids in WoW cannot be? What are the forms that druids in WoW cannot be? First and foremost, druids in WoW cannot be the Stormcrow form, even though that was initially going to be one of their forms.
Indeed. And it's actually rather a major lore gaffe that it's not an included form.
But then again, gameplay-wise, how could you justify flying over everything, including unreleased content?
Indeed. I think it could have been made to work, but hey.
But it would have probably been too long for something that would have basically turned out aesthetic, at best.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much, druids derive their shape-shifting abilities from whichever sets of deities they decide to follow or claim as their totem. At least that's how it's supposed to work. As such, druids of the claw, bears, you know, druids of the talon, crows, druids of the antler, deer, druids of the fang, snakes.
So what would you say would be the main forms? Aside, obviously bear.
Bear, cat, which is a subset of Druid of the Claw, apparently. Dire bear, which is an advanced bear form. A secondary cat form, which is the speed form. The saber-toothed walrus from the abyss.
Gabby clarifies and says that it's a manatee, also known as the sea cow.
Manatees don't have teeth that big. I've been close to a manatee. They're plant eaters.
Whatever it is, it's ugly as hell.
Exactly. It's useful, but it's ugly. Completely lost my train of thought. I'm missing one. Moonkin! The O'Reilly form. So yes. That's it. That's what we could expect of druids.
Catman asks, even though it was mentioned earlier, what really connects druids with night elves? Cenarius originally first taught Malfurion and Illidan.
No, he first taught the Tauren. Then
I mean for night elves.
Yes,
though.
Yes.
Night elves, they were the first ones to be taught, and they spread it. Well,
them
Malfurion
and
spread
they,
it.
The Malfurion and the sons of Cenarius. The mm-hmm. keepers.
And that is all for questions that we have, except for one from Leto.
Oh, God. Leto, why do you do this to me every week?
Because he's not on air, so he can badger you with big, difficult ones. He's going, teehee, I'm not there. I get to make fun of you and make you feel bad for being on air. Anyway.
You know what? I should make it mandatory that I not answer staff questions.
Why? Because we're going to try to stump you?
Exactly.
Well, I had a good answer to this one. Anyway,
yes, you did. I'll let you answer it, actually.
Leto asks, why were the Druids not required to return to the Emerald Dream after the Third War was over and a temporary peace returned? Note, the answer is neither because the World Tree's energies were used up, nor because they knew they would be having some kind of conflict soon. I sort of answered this over the break because, A, there's a huge amount of physical scarring on the physical real plane, not Emerald Dream, but the real plane of Azeroth right now that requires a lot of attention, such as the dying Tauren Druid in the Western Plaguelands. And also, just because a temporary peace returned doesn't mean that they weren't still prepared for a conflict. In a war, just because there isn't anything happening doesn't mean you don't take down your defenses. So, that's as best as I could answer it.
Which sounds like a perfectly reasonable explanation to me.
Just a moment.
Okay, I will continue to talk over this so y'all can't hear it. Okay, so that has pretty much been our summary of Night Elves and our questions and answers. Let me check the Lorekeeper email real quick to see if I've gotten anything. I should have been doing this while Kay was talking. Filling the dead air, filling the dead air. Yes, I'm filling the dead air.
I can fill the dead air slightly.
Thank you.
Now that I have my brother out of here, who seems to feel the need to constantly go wee and interrupt me on vent and everything, you might be able to hear him. I want to see if anyone in staff reads the RPG books. How do they have female druids and male warriors? I assume Night Elf.
I want an answer to this. I was actually asking this anyway.
That's what Vange says. Oh, that's actually sort of good. Catman asks, does the connection with Tarns and Night Elves have anything to do with our already current skills of nature, or could the druid skill potentially be taught to, say, a human?
It is the development of the innate skill of of natural magic within the being.
It should be said that the Night Elves, before they were taught the druidic practices, were already shaping, not cutting down and using logs, but they were already shaping, like, trees to build their homes. They were warping the actual physical structure. So, they had some innate skill, even though that was bad for the trees. They have some innate skill over in nature.
Indeed, and the Tauren are, well, simply the chosen of the Earth Mother. We win.
Vanji has a potential theory as to why females can be druids, and that's because Staghelm allows them, because he's less disciplined than a Furion.
You know, of all the things I'd like to pin on Staghelm's head, that's not one of them.
And, yeah, Kennedy, Strixus sort of just answered why we cannot teach other races druidism.
That's exactly.
Archeron points out, remember for the female druid points, Tyrond was learning with Illidan and Melfurion in the beginning. I'm going to put that in dispute because I don't really necessarily agree with that.
I don't believe she was.
She was present at their training sessions, but I don't believe she was actively following it, because... Oh god, people heard me when I was talking to my brother.
Yes, they did.
Sorry. Oh wow, completely lost my train of thought. Tyrande was also, at the time, employed, not the right word, but, of the faction of the Temple of Ilum. So, I really don't think she'd be picking up or trying to learn druidic ways if she is, part of Ilun. So that further fuels my theory that she was just there because she enjoys spending time with Malfurion and Illidan, and fancied both.
And enjoyed playing them against each other.
I don't think she really enjoyed it.
I think she did.
Well, you think all Night Elves are evil inside.
Yes, I do, but hey! Evil inside. So, okay. We have a special surprise for you folks. It's Canadian Corner time. He actually has one, and he insisted on doing it.
Yeah. This comes from the fact of events that happened a few weeks back. First and foremost, people play games for fun. Yes, that's why we have fun. We play them for enjoyment. We play them for entertainment. We play them to have fun. WoW is a game. WoW should follow under this. Other things are games. They should fall under that as well. Now, everyone I have talked to ever has been guilty of this, myself included, that they get carried away with the game. That they start going, oh my god, what the hell, what the bleep are you doing, you flippin'... Yeah. They get completely carried away, they get angry, sometimes physically lash out at people. There are reports, sparse reports from China over the years of people, like, stabbing other people over what happened in an online game.
There was actually a very good instance of this, actually in the U.S. not long ago, of a father shooting his son's monitor. But anyway.
Yeah, but that's not really the same thing.
Yeah.
These are games. You're meant to play them to have fun. You people, including myself, we have the whole 50 DKP minus thing. You know, that joke that everyone likes to crack about, make cracks about? Well, guess what? That's from someone who's taken it far too seriously. If you think of your, if you think you're getting mad at it, you have to step back and look at, why the hell am I still playing this? Am I still playing this because I feel obligated to? If you feel obligated to, find something to do in it that's fun. Remember why you played it originally. People get so pissed off over these things. People go on the forums, they bitch, oh my god, this guy ninja'd this! And sure, you can be upset with the fact that he stole an item that you were working hard to get, but ultimately, does that detract from the fact that you were supposed to be having fun in these games? It's irritating me that so many relationships, so many friendships can fail over this sort of thing.
See, this is all rather amusing to me because I've had a group that I've gamed with on and off for years now, and we've moved from game to game to game together. So, it's y'all's fault if you take it too seriously. It's fun to the rest of us. And to quote Dunkor, so angry over a video game.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. If you feel yourself getting like that, calm down. Ask yourself, am I still having fun? If you are not having fun, find a way to have fun with it, or stop playing it. Games are meant to be played to have fun.
Indeed. Well, thank you for listening once again to this disorganized episode of The Ancient of Lore, brought to you by Kay's brother and random internet problems. So, it's been a fun night. I hope you have enjoyed this special Beltane episode of Druidic Lore. And now for special WoW radio announcement. Sometime within in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we will be hosting a special WoW Radio podcast, which hopefully, you guys will tune in and listen to on a special topic dealing with Horde and Alliance, PvP, and RP relations. To find out more, stay tuned to the WoW Radio website at wcradio.com. Hopefully we'll have an announcement up about it soon. Tomorrow is Downtime Down Under, hosted by whoever we can get on the air, and Dustin is doing Endgame.
Oh no.
Tuesday night, at least last time I heard.
Oh no.
Wednesday is our dear and beloved Nobusama, yes, Nobunaga. I assume he's doing Wednesday. Anyway, moving on. Thursday is Happy Hour Tavern, which is on an hour later than all our other shows.
Friday? In the usual bracket. Not
yes, in the usual U.S. bracket, yet. Friday is both Vendor Trash and Cue the Music, with an undetermined host this week. Saturday is Epic. Sunday is Shadow Council with Dunkor. And that brings us back around to Monday, which will hopefully be Lido next week. So, thank you for tuning in. Hope you've enjoyed. This has been The Ancient of Lore. Good night.